Wisconsin's Natural Resources Board voted yesterday to declare some Wisconsin bats as a threatened species, in large part because of the looming threat of a spreading disease. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 23rd. We will talk with a state expert about why the bats are threatened and what bats do for us here in Wisconsin and how the DNR might better protect bats from this looming threat. And welcome your thoughts and questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Paul White. He is a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and he works with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming in. So what can you tell us about the four cave bats that were placed on the threatened species list yesterday?
The four cave bats were the little brown myotis, the northern long-eared myotis, the eastern pipistrelle, and the big brown bat. Those have been known out east to be heavily affected by white nose syndrome.
And are those just four species of many species of bat in Wisconsin?
Eight bats have been observed throughout the state. The Indiana bat has not been observed since 1940. That's a federally listed endangered species, so that does not include the four cave bats that we listed here. We also have the three migratory species, which are our silver-haired bat, eastern red bat, and the hoary bat. Those bats will migrate further south and remain active during different parts of the year.
So I'm probably going to call them the brown bat. That's what most of these are. They dwell in caves. Is that right?
During certain parts of their lifetime, they will hibernate and in caves or mines, depending on the suitability of the habitat. Otherwise, they may end up on your building or in your attic or even in your bat house. Typically, the bats that we find that are within human dwellings are the little brown and the big brown bat.
Yeah. All right. So where are the largest concentrations of bats found in Wisconsin? Are they all over the state?
Pretty much concentrated in a couple different areas. Dodge County, which I think you've referred to in other programs, but Nita Mine is our largest known hibernaculum, has approximately 143,000 bats.
Wow.
So it's a large colony as far as the Midwest is concerned. We also have two large concentrations in the northwest part of the state in Pierce County, roughly the same numbers as well, with both of them included. So just roughly those numbers are right around 300,000.
Now, what is the significance of placing the four species of cave bats on the threatened species list? What does that now allow the DNR to do or not do?
Sure. Well, now they are protected under the Endangered Species Law, which does not allow people to transport, possess, or disturb these species during hibernation or even when they form maternity colonies in the summer. This will allow immediate action to ensure appropriate measures are taken place, conservation measures are taken place when people deal with these species day to day.
What is, just generally, how would we disturb a bat?
Well, there's a variety of different ways, but if a bat, for instance, is hibernating, if you disturb that bat, you can have the potential of waking up that bat, and it could use the reserves that it has for the 6 to 8 months that it's going to be underground. So it could use up right around 67 days worth of body fat just by one awakening. So certainly disturbing a bat in hibernation is not a good thing.
But placing the bats on a threatened species list does not mean that a homeowner can't try to get rid of a colony of bats that are in the attic.
Nope. Under the broad incidental take permit, which we've implemented, this permit allows, we recognize that there'll be day-to-day activities that people will still run into bats on a regular occurrence, but we've set up guidelines to reduce the risks of unnecessary fatalities, such as the exclusion guide that we've put out, which basically recommends particular time periods in which people should be excluding bats to minimize the risk of dead bats, especially the young ones of the year. If you exclude the mothers during critical times, you'll actually leave the young ones inside and potentially will kill a large part of the colony.
This is all being done because of this fungus that is killing bats. It's decimated bats in 14 states, mainly out east, and even in Canada, two Canadian provinces. What is this white nose fungus or syndrome?
First found right around in 2006 in New York, 40 miles west of Albany. It was a popular caving site. A caver had actually taken pictures, sent it around to biologists, and the biologists sent it around to other biologists. Nobody had ever seen anything like it. It's a powdery fungus or a powdery substance that appears on the nose, but it can also appear on the forearms, the wing membranes, the tail membranes. This is a fungus that actually invades the skin tissue, causing lesions. It causes the bats to wake up more frequently. They become emaciated and end up dying much earlier than expected. They end up leaving the hibernation sites earlier to try and forage for insects when there is no insects available in February and January.
Poor bats. Do we know what is where this fungus comes from?
We believe it's an invasive species. This was the whole point of the NR40 rule, is that it is an invasive species, that it's a prohibited invasive now. Other sites, such as Germany, Switzerland, and France, have found the disease. It's been genetically identified as the exact same Geomyces destructans. It has not had the effect that it has on the United States population.
Oh, so how is it spread?
It's spread bat to bat mainly, but we also have evidence that shows that it can be transferred through uncleaned or contaminated gear, such as caving gear, or even bat researchers going from cave to cave. It could be transmitted through our through shoes and other sorts of gear.
And this fungus doesn't do anything to humans, but it kills bats.
Yep, it has no effect on humans. As of now, we have no evidence to suggest that.
And how serious a threat is this?
Over a million bats have died so far, and it's not just an eastern phenomenon anymore. It certainly arrived in New York and is quickly spread, averaging around 800 miles per year. Some of the large jumps include Tennessee, western Tennessee, Missouri, and even into Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So it's already passed the Mississippi and is now invading new types of species that are formerly are not existent in the eastern part of the United States. So it's a total of 9 species altogether that we've found that are devastated by this disease.
And this does devastate a bat colony or entire species of bats in a state.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It has the potential, since bats do hibernate, they kind of all their eggs in one basket, has the potential the first year of wiping out about 75% of that colony. But then the next year, it has every bit of the mortality rate of 90 to 100%.
What is the significance of classifying the fungus as an invasive species? What will that do?
Well, pardon me. This will allow us to, again, to take conservation measures that will not allow, hopefully will not allow the fungus, at least through human contact, to be brought in the state knowingly. So we will now have stronger guidelines in which to follow.
Does it mean, for example, and I know specific rules have to be finalized on this effort, but does it mean, for example, that cavers can't go into caves?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Certain sites, we are certainly going to be protecting those with bat gates and definitely regulated entrances. We, even as bat researchers, will be limited to the sites that we can visit now. We have not put out a cave advisory, but we do follow the U.S. Fish and Wildlife cave advisory that was put out in 2009, which basically states that all people should not enter caves or mines for the use of recreational, even bat research, unless it is directly related to white nose syndrome. So unless you're counting bats or looking for evidence of white nose, you shouldn't be entering these caves or mines at any point.
It is expected, or at least I've read that it is expected, that white nose syndrome will reach Wisconsin. It's feared it will reach Wisconsin by this winter.
Mm-hmm. It, at its closest point, which is in Missouri, it's 225 miles away. You take the little brown bat, pardon me, which can possibly travel upwards of 280 miles. That's well within our risk range, and it's at our north point. It can be anywhere. It's about 300 miles away, so it's certainly within the point of travel for a normal bat.
Well, we are talking about how or if the state of Wisconsin can prevent the decimation of our cave bat populations from the spread of this deadly infection or fungus called white nose syndrome. It has wiped out bats in many other states and could reach Wisconsin by this winter. The Wisconsin Natural Resources Board took some steps yesterday to try to protect Wisconsin bats. They have listed four bats, species of bats in Wisconsin as threatened and have declared this fungus an invasive species. We're talking about these efforts to save Wisconsin bats, and we are welcoming your questions for our guest expert, Paul White, a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, who works with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as well after we check our weather forecast. It's going to be a cloudy, breezy day today. The best chance of rain is in northern Wisconsin today. Highs will be in the 60s in the north and the 70s in the southern part of the state, into the 80s as well. Rainy tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s, and tomorrow cloudy and cooler. Highs 55 in the north, 65 in the south. Currently Superior, light rain and 50 degrees. In La Crosse, a light rain mist and 66. Eau Claire reports light rain and 63. Wausau, light rain and 59. Green Bay, a rain mist and 59. In Milwaukee, cloudy, 67. Madison, cloudy and 70. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 23rd. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Today after 5, join Ben and his guest economist for another edition of At Issue Econ 101 to ask your questions about the economy. That's coming up after 5. We are talking about efforts to save the bat in Wisconsin. Actually, bats, a deadly fungus is killing bats all over the country, and it is expected that this infection will reach Wisconsin this winter. The state of Wisconsin is trying to protect the bats and to limit the number of deaths of bats due to this infection, and we're talking about how, with Paul White, conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, who works with the Bat Monitoring Program. And, Paul White, I think we should talk about why. I mean, we don't want to see bat populations or any population of any animal wiped out, but why is the bat so important to Wisconsin?
Most people consider bats a primary predator of mosquitoes, obviously our archenemy. They often carry insect-borne diseases such as West Nile, but they are the primary nighttime predator of night-flying insects. So they eat a variety of moths, beetles, which can attack both agricultural and forest pests. So just in that part, they provide us a free service every night. A little brown bat considered that they can eat upwards of 600 to 1,000 insects, mosquito-sized insects, within an hour. If they can eat their weight in insects per night, especially if they're a lactating female.
Is there any concern that should efforts to save these bats fail, that we're going to be overrun by mosquitoes or other bugs?
Certainly. Pesticide use is expected to go up. We have not been able to test any kind of area, especially out in New York and Vermont, where this disease has went through, to see what the economic impacts as far as pesticide use, avocation, or any kind of other repercussions because of this disease.
What can listeners do to help?
It can put up a bat house. We have a bat roost monitoring program, please don't get discouraged. We can provide you with the details. Most people, when they call us up and they say, "Hey, I've got a bat house. I just can't seem to get bats." Well, oftentimes it's bat houses that need to be built the right way. They need to be built for longevity. They need to be built in the correct fashion. And they also need to be put in the proper placement. They also can help with the roost monitoring, with the acoustic monitoring project, which we train volunteers to go out and use our bat equipment to detect different bats within an area. All bats use echolocation, at least the bats in Wisconsin use echolocation to find prey, which is kind of an ultrasound, and they also travel in the night sky, so that's how they navigate.
We had a Facebook a comment from a listener wondering, where should I put a bat house? She wants to put a bat house up, but doesn't know where's the best place to put it.
Unfortunately, the first place people often put them is right on trees. We recommend against that because of the shade that the trees provide, as well as the readily access for predators to come and go and to retrieve the animals from the bat house. A pole, you want a pole at least 10 to 20 feet up in the air. You want the bat house to be facing south or southeast facing, so it gets a large amount of sunlight. 6 to 8 hours is preferable during the day. Bats like it hot. They like it 90 to 100 degrees, so that's the reasoning for that. You want to be painting it dark, a dark color. If you happen to have two bat houses, I would paint one a dark color and leave one a lighter color so they can adjust different temperatures throughout the day. Also, putting it up on the side of a building, or even your house or a chimney, because the building often retains heat even after the sun goes down, which the bats like as well.
Is this something you would put up now in hopes that a bat might or bats might hibernate there over winter?
Bats will not hibernate within these bat houses.
Okay.
They need a suitable temperature of right around 40 to 50 degrees. Bat houses obviously are exposed to the elements, so they can be negative 15 degrees here in Wisconsin, but also it really isn't the suitable habitat for them. But putting up a bat house anytime is a good idea. The earlier in the springtime, the better, so you allow the returning individuals to actually locate the bat house.
How does this help in protecting bats?
Well, it provides habitat because of habitat deforestation. Mm-hmm. We have problems with people excluding bats. So oftentimes people will exclude bats during critical points of their life, and we are trying to provide habitat for them in such cases as the bat houses, so they can reform colonies and give birth to their young.
We have some callers, so let me go to Kenneth in Custer first. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. You say that this mold is a invasive species. Where was it usually found? As far as spreading, you said that it was spread from cave to cave. How can people stop from spreading this more?
Right. We get it. So we know that it was discovered in New York, but do we know where this this fungus came from in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Again, our evidence suggests that it came from Europe. It's an invasive species from Europe. It does not have the mass mortality that it does here in the United States. I think I didn't remember the second part of the question.
I guess it was more how can we stop the spread?
Oh,
and that's what
okay.
I guess it's not just cavers. You say that just the bat to bat spread is what is maybe even more so.
Sure, bat to bat is certainly the primary vector of transmission. But again, we as humans can limit our exposure levels, so we trying to limit access to these sites, or at least limit the amount of times that we visit these sites. Every time I enter a cave or mine for the purposes of researching white noise, I decontaminate, I strip down, and decontaminate all of the clothing that I use with a U.S. Fish and Wildlife decontamination protocol.
Is there anything that can be done to, this sounds silly, but to treat an infected bat or a cave or something to try to, to stop that the spread?
So far, the attempts that have been made have been, they've been failures. So we're looking into different antifungal type prescriptions, whether it's an aerosol or even something that needs to be applied directly to the bat. But as you might imagine, when you have 143,000 bats, it might be difficult to apply this type of fungus or fungicide to each bat. Also, caves present a whole different project in the sense that they have cave biota that only exists sometimes in those caves. Mm-hmm. So spraying some sort of an antifungus will also have other implications as far as killing other organisms within that cave.
We have just a minute or so before we have to check news from National Public Radio, but do we have any idea why this fungus has not hurt Europe as much as it's hurting the United States? Why would it be so much worse here than there?
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of different theories, one of which is that they co-evolved with the species, with the fungus itself, so which would mean that they're essentially immune to the fungus. All the bats in Europe are protected under a law, under the European Bat Protection Law. They've certainly recognized the importance of bats, and I'm glad to see Wisconsin is stepping in that direction as well.
We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about Wisconsin bats and trying to save Wisconsin bats from the threat of white nose syndrome, a fungus that is spreading across the country and wiping out bat populations in many states. It's expected to arrive in Wisconsin as soon as this winter. What can we do to save the bats? What questions do you have about bats? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Paul White. And we'll continue talking with him after the news. Well, I can't say that I love bats, especially when they're flying around my head like they were when we rented a cabin on a vacation in northern Michigan a few summers ago. That was a nightmare, but I respect bats. I'm not afraid of bats like my big brother-in-law, who is afraid of them. I love that they eat a lot of mosquitoes. I've watched them feed and fly en masse at night outside of an old mine in Iron Mountain, Michigan. That was pretty amazing. I didn't know until recently that Wisconsin has the largest concentration of bats in the upper Midwest because of our many caves and abandoned mines, and those cave bats are in grave danger. We are talking this hour about the efforts underway to save bats in the state from possible extinction from a deadly infection that has spread across the eastern United States and beyond and is expected to reach Wisconsin this winter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, September the 23rd. As we just heard in state news, yesterday the State Natural Resources Board voted to place 4 cave bats on the threatened species list and to classify this white nose fungus as an invasive species. We are learning how this could help the DNR limit the deaths of bats in Wisconsin, and we continue to welcome your questions and reactions to this effort at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Paul White. He's a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He works with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program. And Paul, I meant to ask you, what is it that you do with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program? What is that?
Well, I head up a couple of different projects that we have, the Acoustic Monitoring Project as well as the Bat Roost Monitoring Project. I coordinate volunteers that would like to participate in the programs that we have.
So what might I volunteer to do?
If you wanted to go out and do a bat survey, let's say you want to go out and see what kind of bats are flying in Madison, I would be able to train you using our equipment that we have. It's about just over 5 pounds, and you'd walk around a half hour after sunlight or after sunset, and you would be able to detect all the bats that are in that area, and you'd be able to upload that information to us. From that information, we'll be able to find exactly where you walked to, as well as all the bat encounters that you encounter.
Yeah. And what do you do with that information?
So that will tell us species distribution throughout the state, because we have over 13 units across the state. We've got them as far north as Ashland, Mantrish Waters, Grantsburg, central part of the state, Stevens Point, Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, obviously Madison, and even Platteville. And that will give us a really good idea of what bats are occurring at what different time periods. It'll also give us relative densities as well.
And people can learn more about this or volunteer through the website?
Absolutely. They can go to the DNR website and then type in the keyword bats, and it'll go to our website. I can provide that for you if you'd like.
Yes.
It's WITRI.NET/inventory/bats.
I think bats would be easier. I'm pretty sure we've provided a link on our
okay.
program notes at WPR.org and on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. And indeed, we're going to post a picture on Facebook, if we haven't already, of a small group of bats that have recently decided to hole up in a corner here at Vilas Hall on the UW-Madison campus. So I could take your equipment out there and let you know that there's a couple of spots where I guess the bats are finding a place to sleep anyway. Mm-hmm. What's with that? Is that normal?
This time of year, we expect to see bats kind of out of place, not necessarily congregated in those concentration sites that we normally would see in the summer. They're kind of staging areas. They're looking for their caves and mines. So right now, that this might be a midway point or even a halfway point to their cave or mine. The southwest part of the state, there's many caves and mines down there, so that can certainly be, Madison might be a good launching point to that. Otherwise, they could, might often see them on a roosting on a screen door or maybe underneath your porch or something like that. Again, they're just there temporarily, only stopping over migration.
So no need to be afraid of bats hanging out by the doorway here.
Nope, not at all.
Let's take some calls. Many callers waiting. Gary in Menominee. Hi, Gary.
Hey, good morning. Joy, to your guests.
Morning.
Sometimes down here at the university, we have a bat that or bats that kind of show up like January or February, and then, well, they systematically, just catch them and turn them loose outside. You think it's better just to kill them at that point of the year so they don't suffer?
Well, that's an interesting point. Oftentimes, the bats that we find that are roosting within human dwellings in the winter are big brown bats. They're kind of our hardiest bat. They can withstand temperatures. I never advocate killing a bat.
Yeah.
But on the same token, I see your point as far as trying to release that animal into the environment where it's cold and almost going to die. But still, I would release that animal. Oftentimes, they will find a suitable hibernacula. If they don't, then at least that you haven't contributed directly to the death of that bat. So
yeah.
I would release that bat, and hopefully it would find its way back to a hibernation site.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Yeah, that was quite a big brown-colored bat that was swooping my head in northern Michigan a few years ago, and that was... That's what that probably was, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Was I in any danger there?
No. Oftentimes, the bats that are swooping around are because they are eating the insects that are attracted to you. So they're actually doing you a service, and they're not going to get caught in your hair. I've been outside of Needham Mine, where there's 140,000 bats. I have never been hit once by them. You can feel their wing beats across your head and even just around you. And I've never really been directly hit or been caught in my hair for any reason.
Yeah. And I meant to thank you for coming in so early. This is a lot to ask of a bat researcher to come in this early in the morning, because your work is seriously at night usually, right?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take another call. Carolyn in Madison. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Okay, is there some way I can design my attic to be a hibernating place. What could people do?
You want the bats to hang out in your attic.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't want it. Yeah. But not in the house, you know, but...
Yeah, so yeah. So it, maybe if you have bats in your attic, big deal. Or what is there any way to encourage that, or should she encourage that?
I wouldn't encourage bats living within the human space that you're living in. Certainly, I can provide plans for you as far as the bat house, and we can provide logistics as far as putting them up in the right places. Bats in your home, although they may not cause you any harm, it's not necessarily a good idea.
Yeah, I'm guessing that Carolyn has an attic like I do. It's actually above, you can enter through the garage, but it's not really a living space. Nobody goes up there, but I suppose there's still a possible way for them to get into the living quarters. And if people have bats in their attic and want to remove, you can still, under the new designation as threatened, call some sort of bat control place.
Mm-hmm. Or you can do it yourself. We have a bat exclusion guideline that we've just put out. It's on our website. One of the main stipulations is that they don't exclude during the critical points of the lifetime, which is right around May. It's May 1st through August 31st. So if you exclude during any times before that, then that's totally fine. Mm-hmm.
An email from Don in Shatek, who says, I have seen at least one squirrel with a white nose for a while. Is this related to white nose bat syndrome?
We have not found it on other species, although I think that there might be tests underway to see if it can be transferred to other animals. To this point, I'm unaware of any other animals mm-hmm. that have that.
Kevin in Spring Valley is with us. Hello, Kevin.
Oh, hi. Great show. I was wondering if your guests might be able to talk about barotrauma and bats flying behind the giant wind turbines in the wind farms. I understand the kill rates are very high in Wisconsin. Some studies say 41 bats per turbine, so if you have an 88-turbine wind farm, that's like 3,500 bats a year. And I was hoping your guests could talk about that impact on the species.
I was expecting this might come up.
certainly. The wind farm development areas have been a cause of fatalities for bats. It has affected all of our known species in Wisconsin, known to kill the bats. We are working with various companies to try and mitigate that that fatality rate. You can do that by slowing the turbine rate during critical points of their migration season. Typically, we find that the large mortality events happen in the fall when the bats are moving through an area. The barotrauma you're referring to is when a bat will actually pass through, but they may not actually hit the turbine itself, but they'll the pressure drop right behind the blade will cause their lungs to fill up, similar to the Benz effect, and they'll die right at the base.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh. And does the calling them threatened now, putting them on the threatened species list, change wind farms in any way?
Again, this is under the broad incidental take permit. We're certainly going to work with the wind farm companies to reduce mortality, but at the moment they are covered under the permit, which allows everybody to continue as day-to-day activities continue, but to try and mitigate some of those bat deaths.
We are talking about how to save bats in Wisconsin with the looming threat of a spreading disease expected to reach Wisconsin by this winter. White nose syndrome is decimating bat populations in other states, and the Department of Natural Resources is trying to do something to prevent the same thing from happening here in Wisconsin. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions about this effort to save the bats and any questions you might have about bats in general, bat behavior, or what to do about bats in your house, or how to encourage bats to come to a bat house, and what you can do to help this effort. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question for Paul White, who works with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program as a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be cloudy and breezy. There is a chance of rain in northern Wisconsin today. Highs will be in the 60s in the north, in the 70s in the central part of the state, and into the low 80s in the southern part of Wisconsin. Rainy tonight, lows in the 50s and 60s, and cloudy and cooler tomorrow. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
If you hate mosquitoes, you gotta love bats. Bats are friends of farms and families and forests. In a single night, they'll eat thousands of insects that damage our crops and millions of mosquitoes that carry diseases that can make us sick. Now our bat friends are in danger of getting sick. White nose syndrome is killing bats out east and could be in Wisconsin soon. To learn how you can help us protect our bats, go to the Wisconsin DNR website and search bats.
And we are talking about what you can do to help protect Wisconsin bats as we talk about the efforts underway to protect Wisconsin bats from a spreading disease, white nose syndrome. 1-800-642-1234 if you have questions for our guest, Paul White, conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You kind of smiled when you heard that that PSA. Paul, did you write that by any chance?
No, I was helped in a little bit of the production.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is that's to maybe change some attitudes of some people, because I kind of kidded about my brother-in-law earlier. He is afraid of bats, and a lot of people are afraid of bats.
Mm-hmm. They often get a bad rap. A lot of myths are out there, generally just old wives' tales that don't hold water. So, yeah.
Yeah, but some bats do carry rabies, don't they?
A very, very small percentage. Within the total wild population, we would expect that it's 0.01%, so it's a very, very small rate.
But the point of that announcement and this whole effort is that bats are under a grave threat right now, and we don't want to lose them because they really are important to Wisconsin's ecology and economy, too.
Absolutely. A lot of what they do is unseen, mainly because they're a difficult species to study. They're at night, they're fast flying, they use echolocation. All of those things are contributing factors to not knowing much about the species.
Here's an interesting email from Jason. He says, since Europe or European bats seem to have evolved an immunity to this fungus, can some of these bats be introduced to the U.S. population for mating purposes to spread the immunity?
I'm not entirely sure if those species would be able to interbreed with our species. I think inviting another invasive species into Wisconsin, or at least for propagation purposes, is not a good idea. So I think that we can certainly learn a lot from those animals, but actually, since they are protected, you wouldn't even be able to take an individual and kill it over in Europe. So they would, just to bring it over here would be a huge ordeal, and I don't think it would be logistically possible.
Let's. I wanted to ask you if, for example, some of the eastern states that saw this a couple of years ago. I think I read that New York's bat population, 90% to 100% of these bats died.
Certainly,
finito.
Yes, almost. I would say New York is pretty much void of any of these cave bats.
And so these bats don't. They're not going to go back there. Other bats aren't going to migrate there.
Sure. Well, they may. Other bats from other areas may try and go back to those sites. Unfortunately, we found through transmission studies that even if they went back to a site that no longer holds bats, that the fungus can remain within the cave system or mine system, and it could also infect the other bats.
Yep. That's too bad. Patty in Shell Lake. Hi, Patty.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question. I'm actually in the middle of trying to relocate bats for my attic. And I've put up the netting or a screening, and I've built a bat house and erected that right close by. How can I tell if I'm getting them all out?
Do you have access to your attic at all, or are you willing to go up there?
That laugh means no.
Well, it sounds like you're doing the right thing. What we recommend is that putting up the screening or a bat valve, which allows the bats to exit but not come back in.
Yeah, but I think they might. I don't know if I have it up there properly.
Okay.
So, because I noticed there's a lot of guana. There's one little loop there, and the first night that I had it up there, they went crazy because they were all in the backyard flying, totally confused. And nobody's used the bat house yet, which is erected right close to where they've been entering. And we need to re-roof this hall. That's why I've been trying to relocate them.
Yeah. Any advice?
Well, it does sound like you're doing the right thing again. You definitely want to make sure that sometimes if you put up that screening or even a bat valve over the exit, they might deter to and go to another exit because that's unfamiliar to them. You want to make sure that you find all the exits, and that's certainly important, and you want to keep that up for at least 5 to 7 days. They may not pick up residents right away. It may take upwards of 2 to 3 years. I have a bat house. When I purchased my home, I put it up right away. I have yet to have a bat in my house. So some people have them and don't want them. Other people want them and don't have them. So
Patty thought that the bats were flying around all confused. Were they confused or were they just eating?
They could have been eating, but they also could have been swarming near the exit site to try and investigate it to see if they can actually get back in that site. So,
okay.
Yeah, they could have been confused. Yeah.
Richard in Fort Atkinson is with us now. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a little barn that I need to put a new roof on. So I was thinking about building a big bat house on the north side of the roof. It's a 30-degree roof, so I was going to build a big 4-foot by 8-foot bat house. Is that a good idea, building at a 30-degree angle on the north side of a barn, do you think?
No. I would recommend putting it on the south side of the barn.
Okay.
And the angle sounds fine as long as it's far enough up in the air. It sounds like it would be. It sounds like you're taking the right steps. If you need any more information, you can always call our bat hotline, which is 608-266-2516, and myself or others would be able to provide more information as far as bat exclusion guidelines and bat house plans as well.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Richard. Let's see, lots of callers about bats in their homes or wanting to attract them to their homes. Pat in Boscobel, hi.
Hi. Glad to hear your program because Boscobel does have a large population of bats, it seems. From what I'm hearing, it almost sounds like they're the large brown bats. Just wondering, and you were talking as I'm listening here about old wives' tales, bats getting caught in your hair. Do they... If you're walking outside, because it's hard to walk in the evening here because they're swooping all over the place, how much do you have to worry about them hitting you? And if they're in your home, do you wait till daylight, let them land somewhere, stay under the covers? and the other thing is, you said they're migrating, so does that mean they're going to go away now? And if one gets your house taken care of during the cooler time, will they not come back to that next year?
That's a good question.
Sure. They will come back to the same site each year. It depends on the species. Again, if it's a big brown bat, the potential of it roosting or hibernating in your home is greater than if it was a little brown bat. As far as your problem with bats swooping down while you're walking around in the evening, I've never had a problem with that. I don't think that there should be any fear in relation to that. I forget the middle question.
I think that she was worried. Should they swoop around while you're walking? Should you be worried about that?
Oh no, certainly not. No, I wouldn't be concerned. Again, they're pegging off the insects that are attracted to you, so they're certainly doing a service to you.
Yeah, they're doing a favor. You know, we have just a minute to go. How optimistic are you? Is the DNR that we might be able to protect our bats with this oncoming white nose syndrome on the way?
Well, I'm as optimistic as we can be. Certainly Wisconsin is on the leading edge of being proactive instead of reactive, and I think that that's a good thing. I think that the board's decision, unanimous in both cases, certainly sends a clear message that we are in the right direction. You know, we have various ways that people can contribute to the bat program. We've got a bat conservation fund, so they can certainly donate if they don't want to be active in our acoustic or our roost monitoring program. So I think that we're doing the right things. Yeah.
So go to the DNR's website and search for bats and more information. Thanks a lot, Paul White, for being with us.
Thank you.
Paul White, conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He works with the Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program. Thanks to Rob Farah, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Erica Janik for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.